From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made nearly 40 years ago in Knoxville, Tennessee. For years, the city had seen inequities in its food supply system, with underserved populations lacking access to nutritious, affordable food. A deep recession in 1981 exacerbated those divides. And that's when people from across Knoxville's city agencies joined up to create a food policy council. Members were tasked with monitoring the city's food supply system and making recommendations for improving it. Knoxville City Council approved the Food Policy Council on July 1, 1982. That was the first of about 300 food policy councils now spanning the country, including eight in New York State. Buffalo has one. So does Syracuse. Rochester could be next. Over the last year, local officials, food policy advocates, and community members have worked to design Rochester's own food policy council. It would include 13 members. Those members would represent city government, local nonprofits like Common Ground Health and FoodLink, and city residents. The goal is to address Rochester's so-called food swamp. You may have heard the term food desert used on this program, but policy analysts say the updated term food swamp is a better representation of the situation in Rochester, where there is an abundance of things you can eat, but it's not very healthy in many urban areas, areas in which nutritious food is either difficult to find or hard to afford. So how would a food policy council change all of this, and how would it address the systemic inequities that have led to these food swamps? That is a question that City Magazine editor David Andrietta explored in the April cover story. He joins us this hour, along with food policy advocates, discussing what a food policy council would mean for Rochester. And I'd like to welcome our guests. I love seeing people in studio.
Isn't it nice?
It's nothing new with you, by the way. It's just anybody. David Andrietta is editor of City Magazine, City News. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
On the line with us is Mark Winnie, a senior advisor to the Food Policy Networks. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Evan. Good to be with you.
Mike Bulger is a Healthy Communities Project Coordinator for Common Ground Health. Mike, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan.
And Levine Ford is a tenant association president at Keeler Park Apartments and member of the Food Policy Council planning team. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much, Evan.
So, Dave, you know, we've heard that term food desert for years on this program. I know food swamp is preferred, but why now? Why did city decide to look at this issue now in your May issue?
Well, I was really struck by something that occurred actually in March, and that was the protests to commemorate the Daniel Prude's fatal encounter with police. Mm-hmm. And that protest ended up stopping at Wegmans on East Avenue, the only Wegmans in the city.
Which initially, wasn't that interesting? A lot of people were going, why are you at Wegmans?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's what really piqued my curiosity about it as well. And what the protesters said at the time was that Wegmans represented, and this is in their words, Wegmans represented everything that was wrong with our city. And what they were really railing against were systemic inequities that they saw represented in the likes of a place like Wegmans, which got its start in Rochester, in the city, and lo and behold, you know, 70, 80, what are we, maybe 100 years later, I don't know when Wegmans exactly started, but close to a century later, there's all but one store to be found in the city of Rochester. There are plenty of stores around the city, but only one in the city on East Avenue. And so when this was brought up as an issue at this protest, and it got so much publicity, I thought to myself, you know, there's really something here. There's something to look at. It happened to coincide with, you know, we're always planning for a magazine. We're planning a good 6 to 8 weeks out. Mm-hmm. And it coincided with a vote that was on the schedule for city council to adopt a new food policy council. I'm like, you know, there seems to be an intersection here that we can work with, raise an issue where there's a real news hook and get people talking.
You talked in your piece to a man named Justin Morris, who we've talked to on this program, who told you that, I think his was the quote where he said, you know, Wegmans is everything that's wrong with Rochester, pointing out that this was a story, as you mentioned, and the history of it that starts in Rochester, now is primarily suburban in our area, before spreading to even other states and other parts of the state. And Justin Morris said in your piece, quote, what we have now are corner stores. They put up these fly-by-night menus, and they're all the same. Fried chicken, steak subs, French fries. That's universally on every corner in Rochester. They have almost no healthy options. And he goes on to tell you, quote, if there is a healthy option, it's usually a rotten banana. end quote. So so when you look at these healthy stores, that's why we get the term food swamp, right? I mean, there's food, there's things you can eat, but it's really unequal.
Correct. And when I first started looking into this, quite honestly, the story just wasn't even formed yet. It was sort of like, all right, we've got this food policy council thing on the city council agenda. We could talk about that. There's this Wegmans issue, and there's some sort of way where they link in the middle, and I'm just not sure what that is. And I kind of began down the road just talking to people on the periphery and then moving into the more, you know, central issue of it. And invariably, I use the term food desert, and invariably, almost everyone I talked to sort of bristled at that at that term. It's just sort of, I mean, it's still in play with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, but it's been poorly defined over the course of many, many years. It just still hasn't seemed to have been a pinpointed definition of it. And from the people I was talking to, the preferred term, and I've taken some grief after writing this article about this term as well, is more of a food swamp. It's not that the a food desert implies that there's nothing there, that it's just barren.
Right.
And of course, that's not true. There are plenty of options here in Rochester. There are also wonderful restaurants in some of these places that are quote unquote food deserts, as designated by the USDA. But really, what we're looking at is an inaccessibility to healthy and affordable foods, and a lot of accessibility to foods that, you know, don't necessarily hit all the food groups.
Okay, and so we've got an outstanding panel here who David and the city team have not only been talking to, but helping understand this issue. Listeners, if you want to join us here, I'd love to hear from you. Send me an email, connections@wxxi.org, connections@wxxi.org. What has changed where you live when it comes to accessible food? What is working? What is not working? Some of it is history, and the piece touches on Constantino's, which we will get to. But before I jump over to Mark and Levine and Mike for some of their perspective, you know, Dave, when you look at 300 cities across the country, I'm sure not every food policy council is the same. And I'm also certain that that doesn't mean 300 American cities have figured this out and made it better. It doesn't magically solve the problem.
Yeah, of course not. But I would argue that what it can do is just bring it to top of mind. Mm-hmm. What experts like some of the people who are on your panel today, and I won't speak for them, but in my conversations with them, one phrase that I kept hearing over and over was a local department of food. You know, we don't have a department of food, a federal department of food. Yeah, we have a Department of Agriculture. That's a different animal than what they're talking about here. And so at the very least, something like this just raises consciousness and, you know, can get people talking. And there have been some small success stories in other cities that we've seen. Philadelphia, Baltimore, New York City just launched a 10-year food accessibility equity plan. Whether it will solve anything, I guess, remains to be seen. But at the very least, people are talking about it.
Levine Ford is the Tenant Association President at Keeler Park Apartments and member of the Food Policy Council Planning Team. Levine, where is the Keeler Park Apartments located?
Come Manor Drive, across from the Walmart on Hudson Avenue, in the 104.
In the 104, okay.
Right in there.
And what is sort of life like for people in the Keeler Park Apartments when it comes to food accessibility?
Well, the only good thing that we do have, we have Walmart right across the street. That's where we're blessed at, so people are able to shop there. But if Walmart was not across the street, it would be the RTS bus down to Aranaquay to go to the Wegmans, or not be able really to do proper shopping. And then, of course, groceries have gone up, but that's where we're blessed at. But when you take away Walmart, there's no place around here that we can shop unless you go down to Wegmans and Aranaquay. We're right on the border.
What is it like with corner stores, for example, there, Levine?
They have a lot of, like you said, a lot of unhealthy, junky foods, and the closest corner store to us is the gas station store at 104 in Hudson to the right before you would make your left. But they have a lot of unhealthy foods in there, too, hot dogs, junk foods for people to purchase. And most of the stores up and down Hudson Avenue is all junk food, fried chicken, or a slice of pizza, which has 2,000 calories without the pepperoni in it, and other unhealthy foods.
Mm. What do you want to see change first? I mean, part of the goal this hour is understanding what this council, this coalition of people from our community may do. And there's not any one easy solution. I mean, I assume if there was, it would have been achieved by now. But what's one thing that stands out to you, Levine, that you want to see change?
Well, one thing I'd like to see change is this. We have a lot of empty or vacant buildings up and down Hudson Avenue that the RTS bus does go to. And Wagmans, in the article, they said $150 million on education, but not education that I know of about eating healthy, nutritional foods. And if they were willing to donate monies to open up some of these vacant buildings as healthy grocery stores at a reasonable price, which would be a tax break for them, that's one idea that I've come up with.
Okay.
To help service the neighborhood.
Bring Wegmans back, essentially, Levine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think they really want to be in the city. Don't forget, their East Avenue store, that's in basically a prominent area. But Wegmans back in the sense that they would fund healthy foods inside of some of these vacant buildings and get some employees to run the store to make people, so people can have accessibility, number one. And number two, the foods are affordable.
David, when it comes to the history here, I think the piece mentioned 2003 was when Wegmans left Mount Hope. The Mount Hope store closed. There had been talk about an expansion there. It ended up closing. So when Levine says, hey, what stands out to me first of all, let's get Wegmans back in the city, how often did you hear that when you're putting this piece together?
Oh, that's a constant. And really, when I talk to people in these, I'm gonna use the term only because, for lack of a better one, these food desert communities. When I spoke to people in these neighborhoods, the most common thing that they said was they wanted a grocery store there. That was like by far the most common thing. But I think for most people in Rochester, grocery store is synonymous with Wegmans. And there's also, I think, a sense of quality and a sense of pride that they want to have associated with their neighborhood, that they feel Wegmans is taking away from them by not being there.
So, Mike Bulger, does Wegmans have a moral responsibility to this community to be in the city more than they are?
Well, that's a tough question. I don't really want to speculate on the moral responsibility of Wegmans. What I will say is that, you know, they have made the decision to leave the city. And I think that a number of different factors have led them to that decision. And I don't know if, the terms that they used to leave the city are any different or any improved. So I have a hard time seeing them, take it upon themselves to sort of reverse course. And that's where I think that community members coming together, stakeholders coming together, and city government, responding to these issues can either incentivize larger retailers to move back into the city or foster the growth of smaller retailers. I mean, there could be an argument made that a smaller, still full-line grocery store, but, smaller footprint store would be more viable in the short term in neighborhoods. And, we might be able to get that sort of retail activity into more neighborhoods at a quicker pace rather than trying to lure in corporations. Does Wegmans have a moral responsibility? Well, I guess Wegmans' moral responsibility as a corporation is to make money. And it's up to the people and the community in the city of Rochester to figure out how to either, wrangle that and deal with those terms or find another path and another solution.
David, would you rather me not ask you if you think Wegmans has a moral responsibility, or do you think Wegmans has a moral responsibility here?
I tend to agree with Mike, to be honest with you, that corporations have one responsibility, and it's to their shareholders. That's a private Wegmans is a privately held company, but their responsibility is to make money. Mitch Gruber, City Councilman Mitch Gruber, who was involved in the formation of this Food Policy Council, and of course is an executive at FoodLink. He's featured prominently in the story. He wrote a thesis on this entire issue of the what he called the degradation of retail food in the city of Rochester that I quoted quite a bit in this piece. But you know,
he was amazed that you actually read it.
Right. apparently, I'm the third person to read it. But I would argue that anyone who wants to understand this issue should look it up. It's easy to find online. If not, you can go to my Twitter page. I just tweeted out the story that I wrote for City, and it's linked in there. But you know, there are other experiments in which that have piqued his interest. One took place in a town. I believe it was Baldwin or Baldwinsville, Florida. Where the town literally bought a grocery store. It started a grocery store. The checkout people, the produce manager, the dairy manager, they're on the city payroll. They do other things too, you know, cutting the town grass, paving the roads, whatever it is they do in this small town. I don't want to speak for Mitch, but I think I quote him in the story in which he says, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a viable option for Rochester. But this idea where if we could find a way where the grocery store, somewhat a supplier of groceries, isn't necessarily after a profit, because that's really the key here. So do I think, you know, Wegmans has a moral responsibility? I think they have a responsibility to make money. That's what they do. That's what they want to do. And they've clearly, their strategy people have figured out that they can make more money outside of the city of Rochester. Okay, fine. So what does that leave us with? And an option like that, if it exists, if it can be somehow harnessed and put together, might be viable.
Now, let me just mention, before we get to Mark Winnie here, I want to get a couple of listeners who are waiting to jump in on some of what we've already talked about. And on the story of the Baldwin Market in Baldwin, Florida, the reason that Mitch Gruber told City News, City Magazine, that he doesn't think something like that can work in Rochester, he told you that was a unique thing because it's a rural community. He thinks the same practices and principles, the same practices and principles can work here, but he's careful about, I think, drawing too much of an apples to apples with Baldwin. It's interesting when you've got 1,600 residents in the whole town, in a town where you'd otherwise got to drive 10 miles to the nearest supermarket, and everybody in the store. All the store's employees are on the municipal payroll. I mean, that is a very different model. So I think it's fascinating, but you're right. It's so different than what we see here that maybe it takes something like that, but I don't know.
I don't know either. But I think the concept of the not-for-profit, and of course we all know that not-for-profits do make money.
Sure.
But in this case, it's really just about breaking even. That's what Baldwin is doing in Florida.
Yeah, that's their literal stated goal.
Yeah.
So before I jump to Mark Winnie, let me just close the loop on a couple of points that have come up already. And Jacob from Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, Jacob.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, Jacob.
When you're talking about Wegmans' responsibility, what I look at, because I used to live in a Driving Park Dewey store neighborhood, and as it was getting ready to close, it wasn't safe for us Wegmans customers to be in that parking lot. So as that neighborhood deteriorated, the customers were in jeopardy also. So yes, the Wegmans might have a responsibility, but they have it for both ways.
Yeah, so Jacob, can I just ask you about that experience real briefly? Because I wasn't there for that, and I'm not at all questioning the validity of your characterization, but I do wonder, was there security posted in the parking lots? Was there a perception of danger in the same way that, for example, at the old Irondequoit Mall, there was a perception of danger that didn't really match the reality, or was there real danger in your mind?
Within, I can't remember how many months, that entire corner was on fire with the riots. So I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Okay, so, but it sounds like what you think is...
Neighborhood was deteriorating.
Okay.
And as it deteriorated, Wegmans wasn't at fault. Kodak was withdrawing, IBM was withdrawing, Xerox was withdrawing, Bosch & Lomb was withdrawing. Tops has stayed in the mega locations.
So yeah. Taps hasn't even been in the conversation.
Yeah, that's true. And so there's a number of points here I want to touch on. I appreciate the phone call, Jacob. Levine, when you say you want to see Wegmans in the city and Jacob says they were there and it wasn't safe, what do you think, Levine?
Well, I think that perception sometimes is not reality. And I should correct myself. When I say Wegmans in the city, since they do a lot of donating, they don't have to even have their own physical employees. A building should be purchased with healthy foods in there, and you hire people from the neighborhoods. That's what I really should have said. They have more than enough funds to be charitable, to give back to the community, to help make them rich, to put them out in all the suburban areas.
Yeah, and you know, Levine, I have notes from listeners saying, how come nobody's talking about Tops, Aldi's, Price Right? I think it's Aldi. I'm becoming my mother. But you know, Levine, maybe that's a testament to the power of Wegmans in this community, that it sort of dominates food conversations. But what about those other names? I mean, whether it's Aldi, Tops, Price Right, are those factors for you and your neighbors?
Well, they're welcome to take a bite at this new policy that we're trying to put in place. And I personally, I do most of my shopping at Aldi's anyhow, because the fruit and vegetables are just as great as Wegmans, and it's more affordable for my pocketbook. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I just came back from Aldi's before I came on your show.
So I want to get Mark and Mike on this. I have to ask you, Dave, if you think that we over-focus on Wegmans as a community when we talk about these issues.
The fact that a grocery store is a tourist destination, yeah, it's a problem. I'm serious.
It's a problem?
I'd say it's a problem. I mean, the idea, this love affair that this community has with Wegmans.
You think it's a problem?
I do think it's a problem.
I do, too.
Okay. So too much focus on Wegmans, not enough conversation about other options, et cetera.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay. Mark Winnie, can you describe, you're a senior advisor to the Food Policy Networks. Can you describe what your role is here?
My role is to assist groups like the one in Rochester who are trying to start a food policy council.
And when we look at other communities, you know, for example, Hartford, Connecticut, like Rochester, supermarkets have largely abandoned the city for the suburbs. There's a Hartford Advisory Commission on Food Policy that, you know, was taking a look at transit. And I know that you feel that we talk a lot about whether it's Wegmans or grocery stores, but we should also talk about transportation. So let's talk about both those issues. But is Hartford a pretty good analog for Rochester in your mind?
I think so. You know, when I worked there for 25 years, I haven't been working there for 15, or actually more like 20. But, you know, we had 13 supermarkets close their doors and move to the suburbs, and the city was left with virtually nothing. And we grappled with that problem for a very long time. I think the problem is that people they get focused on the idea that if they bring a supermarket back into the city, that will solve their problems. That's not enough. I mean, this is a complicated thing that we call a food system, and it's made up you know, not just the stores, not just the retail business operations, but it's also public services like transportation. It's also about health. I mean, let's keep in mind what the consequences are when you don't have a supermarket, or when people have to go a long distance to get to a supermarket. They often have higher rates of obesity, and they have higher rates of diabetes. You know, there are serious health consequences, to say nothing of the injustices associated with not having supermarkets readily accessible.
So if transportation is such a key one here, I mean, this is a community that has recently seen a reimagined plan for its local transit system, for its local transportation system. And I wonder if what you have seen from Rochester, Mark, indicates that that we can solve some of these issues with transportation.
I think that I recently read about Rochester in the New York Times and how they're talking about changing their highways and so forth, which I think is a great idea. I think that's been part of the problem over the last 30 or 40 years across urban America. But I think actually looking at the city as a whole, again, as a system, and the role that public transportation plays, where people are located in neighborhoods, how you get to certain necessary businesses like food stores, I think looking at a problem like that or an issue like that comprehensively is the one that's going to give you the best solution.
Okay. And Mike Bulger, how do you feel about that? I mean, are we talking a little bit too much about grocery stores and not enough comprehensively about transportation and some of the other issues in play here?
I think yes. And I think that, you know, we shouldn't be faulted for it, right? Because grocery stores are an obvious solution, right? An obvious and, you know, very visible solution to problems of access to healthy food. But it really goes way beyond that, right? If we plop Pittsford Wegmans down in the middle of the city, you know, many people will still have issues getting there, right? It takes time to get downtown from a neighborhood, and you don't have a, you know, access to a car, you know, you have to devote even more time, right? And everybody has other responsibilities too. So in my mind, it's a lot about convenience as well, right? So not just creating a single destination, but really making up a city that, you know, has access within all neighborhoods and where the healthy options are the default, right? That would be the ideal goal in my mind. So you don't have to walk or take a bus by 20 corner stores before you get to something that's healthy, right? At the heart of this is, you know, I think health inequities and inequities, right? So someone living in a neighborhood in Rochester that doesn't have the convenient access to healthy food is going to, you know, like anyone, be more likely to choose unhealthy options more of the time, right? And, you know, all the stresses that go along with, you know, struggling to make ends meet, you know, pile on, and we're more likely to eat unhealthy when we're stressed out. This all has long-term and visible effects on health inequities when we look at the data for our region. So to address that, right, we need to be comprehensive. We need to look at beyond just dropping a healthy grocery store in a neighborhood, which could be part of the solution, to how are people going to get there? What about people in other neighborhoods? And even are there things beyond retail stores that we need to look at? Do we need to help people with culinary skills learn how to prepare these, you know, cost advantage, whole, unprocessed foods themselves? Cut down on the time they have to devote to preparation. Do some people want more information about just basic nutrition? And how can we build this, you know, sort of healthy way of eating and these, you know, positive relationships with food into the supports that we give our kids, whether in schools or at our centers or libraries? All of this stuff is within the realm of public policy, the public good, and you know, I think all of our moral obligations, Wegmans included. You know, I don't want to dehumanize the people who work for Wegmans. So I believe that the Food Policy Council can be a place where different stakeholders with different ideas, different solutions, and different experiences can collaborate, share their knowledge, share their ideas in a safe space, right, where everybody can have a, you know, a wild, bold idea. And then we start to look at what are the little pieces, like transportation, like tax incentives or access to vacant lots for gardening or, you know, changing the school curriculum. What do we need to do to start building this piece by piece so that we get to that city that starts to erase those inequities so that everybody, no matter what neighborhood they're born in, no matter where they live, no matter what their income, has a right to healthy food, food that makes up a healthy diet.
Well, Levine, Mike is making the point that even if you took a store the size of the Pittsford Wegmans and dropped it into a Rochester neighborhood, there would still be issues of transportation for people getting there. So, for example, Levine, people who live at Keeler Park Apartments, I mean, what percentage of those residents have a car?
I would say we have over 2,000 residents. I would say that we have maybe 200 people with vehicles because we have a ramp garage, and I think we hold 200 or maybe 300, but most of the people don't have transportation.
Right, right. And so what comes to mind for you when it comes to how transportation works into this and what could be done to help people specifically, Levine?
I think instead of the shuttle bus going down to Wegmans on Fridays, once they put in a healthy grocery store, the shuttle bus, there should be a shuttle bus, or I even work out a contract with RTS to take people to the grocery store and bring them back. It could be 3 days a week, 1 day a week, 4 days a week. But that would be a great solution for grocery shopping if it wasn't, like, too far to go, or even it was a distance to go. But we're not talking about from here out to Pittsburgh or Henrietta.
Yeah. Listener writes to say, I live at Mount Hope in Alexander. Can't drive. I don't like the bus, so I bike and walk. The closest place for me to get affordable fresh vegetables is Brighton Tops, which is 3 miles away, so 6 miles round trip. So if I want something quick or closer, I just go to one of the many dollar diabetes stores that were within a mile and a half. That's the phrase that the listener used, essentially just talking about the speed of getting something as opposed to taking a long trip to get something healthy and fresh that Mike Bulger's talking about. Let me grab a call from Tom in Rochester, and maybe we can finally close the loop on Wegmans for the hour, but we'll see. Go ahead, Tom.
Okay, thank you very much, Evan.
Yep.
I want to just make 2 points, and one leads into the other. I've heard a lot of commentary that access to good food is a right, and actually I agree with that. But I would also say that if something is a right, rights are enforced and protected by the government. And so to me, it's up to the partnership of different governments to make sure that citizens have access to good food. And tying that into Wegmans, I can remember years ago when Wegmans was going to replace its Mount Hope store. It negotiated with the city, and the city, quite frankly, and I suppose, I don't know if there's a public record of this, but the city was very negative on Wegmans trying to replace that store in the city at the same time that Wegmans was also looking to put a companion store in the area. And when it redid its East Avenue store, which has long been a good and profitable store, the process with the city was incredibly difficult. And part of the traffic circulation problems, because the government decided to quote, help, end quote, design the traffic circulation that Wegmans had to go back later and try to fix. So those are the 2 points. One, that Wegmans has tried in the city, and number two, that if it's a right, it's the government that secures rights for its citizens. And there ought to be more efforts by whatever government, whether it's the city, whether it's the county and the city and the state, to really bring good food to every place in the city. Thank you.
Tom, I appreciate that. And I want to direct a sort of bounce off that to Mark Winnie on this, because when Tom says, Mark, that that he does agree that the idea that good food should be a right and therefore it should be a right secured by the government, my mind goes back to Baldwin Market in Baldwin, Florida. And I wonder, are government-run stores more of the future, Mark?
I don't think I would subscribe to that point of view. Government has a role to ensure people's rights, and I would agree that access to good, healthy, affordable food is a right. And it's also part of how we think about, you know, citizen participation and democracy and so forth. And, you know, the Food Policy Council, you know, as a collection of people with a lot of knowledge, collective knowledge about food in a particular place like Rochester, are able to figure out what the different parts are, how we make democracy work, how do we make, you know, the bureaucracies of city government work, how do we help the private sector be more effective in meeting our needs. So it's that expertise, that collective expertise of the Food Policy Council, which is making democracy work. It's an expression of democracy, and it's also ensuring the right to food that the gentleman was discussing.
Yeah, and I guess, David, you know, when we think about what we have learned doesn't work, your piece touched on this. Constantino's is one story. In College Town, there's an Ohio-based store that comes in with a pretty big chunk of government support, closed in what, less than a year, 10 months, I think your story said?
Yeah.
Hearts is another example. Some listeners emailing the show saying, how come nobody's brought up Hearts? Hearts is an example of a store that its adherents loved, but it didn't have enough adherents. And you know, for whatever support it got, and I don't have all the roles to flesh that out, but the point is, you know, more expensive stores have not worked. I mean, clearly, I think we're getting a picture of what doesn't work. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. In terms of Constantino's, well, and I guess I would also argue with Hearts. I mean, like you pointed out, Hearts just didn't have the customer base. In terms of Constantino, it sounds like a great idea, right? The area is swamped with University of Rochester students. How many students go there? I'm, you know, off the top of my head, 7,000,
yeah,
something in that neighborhood. It sounds like a great option for them. Well, yeah, except, you know, 5,500 of them are on food plans, and they don't leave the campus. Constantino's, some of those prices were extraordinarily higher than they were at Tops, which, yeah, was a few miles away in Brighton that the caller mentioned. Or that an emailer mentioned, but we're talking like, you know, double the cost and sometimes triple the cost for orange juice and bread and other staples like butter at Constantino's. So affordability is a real issue here. You touched on transportation. I would argue that affordability is also a real issue. You know, and again, I'm not trying to harp on Wegmans here. I mean, as we know, Wegmans has done a lot for this community. They give away tens of millions of dollars every year for education, all kinds of issues, you know. But the fact remains, they're not here in the city anymore, with the exception of the one store. But in the research for this article, I stopped by a low-income apartment where Foodlink has a mobile market, one of its mobile markets mm-hmm. that I think started up about 13 years ago. And they travel around to these places, senior centers, community centers, apartment houses, and they sell fresh fruits and vegetables. And I saw someone buying an avocado that looked so good. I was thinking to myself, you know, when I go home tonight, I'm going to have an avocado. I'm going to have an avocado sandwich. That avocado at that mobile market was 75 cents. On my way home, where did I stop? I stopped at Wegmans. Picked up a couple of avocados, $1.49.
Yeah,
so there you go.
$1.50, there you go. I felt like you were going to make me guess the price, and I knew it. I was ready for this. I do think, based on your reporting, based on history and what the Food Policy Council is looking at, I think there's a lot more sophistication that I don't think you're going to see a council in Rochester just subsidize a new iteration of Hearts or Constantino's. I think those lessons have been learned, and the solutions will be more sophisticated. We are way late for our only break with David Andreatta, editor of City Magazine, which so beautifully, not just in its reporting, but in the art, tackled the story of Food Policy Council in Rochester and what it means. Mark Winnie's on the line with us, a senior advisor to the Food Policy Networks. Mike Bulger from Common Ground Health, and Levine Ford, who is a member of the Food Policy Council planning team. And we are right back with them on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the trading card market has exploded in the last year. During the pandemic, baseball, football, even Pokemon cards have exploded in value, especially for the mint condition cards, and grading companies are paid a lot of money to assess the quality. Now, I have no idea if this affects your old collections, but we'll find out. We'll also find out if Target's going to sell cards again. Right now, they're not, to protect their own staffs. That's next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Mike Bulger, where are things going next with the Food Policy Council? I was not at the city council meeting in May. What's happening next with it?
Well, we have opened up applications. So the Food Policy Council is seeking members. So, you know, we were late for the break, Evan. I think that was just evidence of, how much there is to talk about.
Oh, I could read emails all day here. There's so many. Yep.
And you know what? That's wonderful. And there's going to be differing opinions and different perspectives. And we're hoping to mix that all together like a big stew and come up with something that's going to nourish Rochester. So we have opened up the Food Policy Council application process. You can go to rockfoodpolicy.org and find more information there. There's online applications. There's also paper applications available at any City of Rochester library branch. And the neighborhood service centers also can help you apply to be a member. Now, I want to also add that once we seat this first Food Policy Council, that is not the end of the opportunity for somebody to get involved. The Food Policy Council itself will form subcommittees that are open to non-Food Policy Council members, anyone from the community, city resident, outside the city, business, institution, nonprofit, you know, anybody, that will be issue specific, whether it's urban agriculture or healthy food retail or school food or, you know, whatever it is that that is prioritized. So I would say apply to be a member. And if you are not a member or want to get involved less intensely, be on the lookout for the subcommittees and some more community engagement on issues.
Evan, could I just quickly clarify for listeners what the Food Policy Council is? This gets back to a caller who talked about government's responsibility with, you know, making sure people have access to healthy food. It touches on what Mark Winnie said. So just so everyone understands, the Food Policy Council is a collaboration between Common Ground Health, which Mike Bulger is a representative of, Food Link, and the City of Rochester. So it's those three entities that have come together to form this thing. I didn't know if that was made clear in the earlier part of the discussion.
Okay, very good.
Thanks, Dave. And Evan, if I could just add too that we, as you know, those three institutions are aiming to take a supportive role here. So when the Food Policy Council is formed, it will be made up of city residents who will be the chair and the vice chair. And we think that the key to this, right, is really letting residents come up with the solutions and build the solutions and lead the work. They're the experts in their neighborhoods. They're the experts in their community. And we aim to, you know, support that, you know, that process of democracy in action.
All right. I'm just going to, in the next 10 minutes, we'll get as many comments as we can. I've got at least two emails on, and I'll read Nancy's. Nancy says, Evan, great discussion. I live within walking distance to the East Avenue Wegmans, and I do most of my grocery shopping at the public market, yet no one has mentioned it. Several listeners have mentioned the public market. Mike Bulger, is that an important piece of this, or is that really only valuable for people who can access it?
I think it provides some great opportunities. Obviously, it's an important food hub for our community. A lot of food and farmers come there and bring great products. So, you know, yes, again, it's one location, right? And that presents challenges for people. So what could we do as a city, as a community, to better connect the public market to neighborhoods and maybe make some of those great products more accessible? I think that could be a great part of the solutions that we build.
Paul from the South Wedge says, Evan, for your listener, on Mount Hope near Alexander, there's Abundance Co-op about a couple blocks away. You don't have to be a member of Abundance. It's healthy, reasonably priced, and plenty of selection. I'm glad Paul mentioned that. I'm glad we didn't go the hour without mentioning Abundance and some of the work they do. Again, probably a lot of different little pieces, as Mike and Levine and so many others have mentioned this hour. Not one single easy solution. Let me just keep working through the feedback. This is Vargas in Rochester. Hi, Vargas. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you, Evan?
Good.
This is Bohan.
Bohan, Vargas.
That the public market is an excellent place in Rochester to buy healthy food, and that could be expanded. That have been tried before. We didn't succeed, but that doesn't mean that we cannot try again. But I'm very disturbed by the comment by one of your guests that visiting and having pride in one of our most successful business in recent history, but that's a problem. So I wonder if that could be explained further, because I am perplexed. Why would that be a problem when it should be a pride?
David Andriotta.
Sure, sure. And, well, I think Bohan is mischaracterizing my statement. But what I said was that I think it's a problem that we have this love affair with Wegmans here. That's not to suggest that we shouldn't be proud of it, or to suggest that Wegmans doesn't do a lot for the community. But I think it's awfully strange. This is the only place I've ever lived where a grocery store is thought of as a tourist destination. That's strange.
Well,
but what's wrong with that?
Too many feet
I'm sorry. And secondly, I would argue that when there is too much love for one institution, it cuts down on the possibility for competition, and that can possibly lead to that institution taking advantage of residents. I'm not suggesting that's going on, but in some places, it sometimes feels that way. Like when an avocado costs $1.49, and you can get it at Foodlink for 75 cents.
Okay, so but let me ask Bullhen if you wanted to add any more there, and I appreciate the call.
Yes, I would like to. I don't want to monopolize the discussion, but if you would like, I will send you a list of city and region that pride themselves in successful business. Have you ever been in Seattle?
No, I've never been to Seattle.
Okay. Would you think it's crazy for the people there to have such a pride in their fish market?
And I don't think it would be crazy for people in Seattle to have pride in Amazon either. But I think there's also a lot that could be said about the problems that Amazon, that can potentially cause. I don't want to get into an argument about this.
First of all, are you aware that they started one of the first programs to offer fresh breakfast meal to children in the Rochester City School District?
I wasn't aware of that. That sounds wonderful.
Okay, I could give you a longer list. Were you aware of the amount of investment that they have put in employing students from the Rochester City School District to work in their supermarket?
I don't have a figure in my head, but I know that is one of their programs.
And let's just let me jump in, Bullhen, because we got to stay on topic.
Is he a Wegman spokesman?
No. Listen. I knew the Wegmans acolytes were going to come for you when you made your remarks. I think what you are saying is you can have pride in your institutions to do well, but be careful not to worship them, because then they could be given sort of an advantage. It sounds like Levine agrees. What do you think, Levine?
I agree 1,000%. Some people are brainwashed. Anyone can show you a pretty picture, but what is behind that pretty picture?
Well, okay. I appreciate that, Bullhen. Thank you for the phone call. I think the last time I saw him was in a Wegmans. Candace in Rochester.
You see everyone in a Wegmans.
I do. Candace, got to keep it tight. Go ahead, Candace.
Oh, I think what we need to also bring to the conversation is gardening and maybe Foodlink, the library, gardening, putting up your own food. Those are solutions as well that, you know, may take some education citywide, but that's what we did when I was young, albeit we lived in the country, but we always had a garden. We always canned. We canned as a family. We froze up food. And I think that is also part of the conversation and maybe education we can provide the city, the students of Rochester.
So I would just point the listener to a complimentary story in City that ran alongside the main piece on the Food Policy Council on urban agriculture. Mm-hmm. Really wonderful piece by Jeremy Moll about exactly what she's talking about.
Mark Winnie, 30 seconds. What do you think Rochester needs to do next to make this thing work?
30 seconds.
I know.
So I'm going to congratulate Rochester, and particularly the movers and shakers on this, Mitch and Mike, about, you know, having a food policy council. I think it's a great opportunity for the city to look far and wide at all the solutions that are available to them, look deeper into some of the problems that have occurred over the decades, and really, in a way, start fresh, start new, you know, start from, you know, right at the beginning, and to kind of rethink your food system, reshape the food system, and come up with a vision, you know, a good, clear vision of what you want Rochester to look like with respect to food, access to healthy food, justice, you know, making sure that everybody has equal access to healthy and affordable food. So I think that that's really what the challenge is. But I think you have a great opportunity, because now you have a food policy council. You have a table where people can work on this problem together.
Well said. Levine, 30 seconds. What do you want to see happen next year?
I would like to see all of us work together to see this to fruition, even Wegmans, if possible, with the understanding is, if you want to write it off in your taxes, that's great. But help us to walk forward so people can have healthy foods.
Mike Bulger, where can people learn more online? You mentioned it once. Tell them again.
rockfoodpolicy.org.
You an optimist on this one, Mike? Are you optimistic that we're going to be talking in 5 years from now and we're going to say, look at all the change?
I believe so. I believe just the amount of people who've been engaged in this planning process and the amount of opportunities there are to make improvements, I think real actionable ideas for improvement, I think that we will have a lot to show in 5 years.
The City Magazine, of which this graced the cover, is now last month's. It was a great cover, by the way.
Thank you.
Your team does a phenomenal job on the art, the layout. It really looks great.
Thank you.
I just want to say that David Andriotta is the editor of City Magazine. Where can people find it? I mean, they're not going to find, that's not the current one, but they'll find it online somewhere.
They'll find it online at rockcitynews.org or rochestercitynewspaper.com and in print at over 300 locations, including at your Wegmans, and which we're grateful for. Which we are grateful for.
Thank you, David. Mark Winnie, thank you very much, sir. Great talking to you.
Thank you.
Levine, good luck to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Thank you, Mike Bulger. More connections coming up.